Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 102.7 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, September 23rd, 2011. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I'm joined here today by my co-host, Tara Gardner, our guest co-host, Robin Pickle, and Morgan Ahoff, who is watching over my shoulders today as I run the controls. Welcome, everyone.
Hey.
It's Pickle.
Pickle, sorry. I was thinking dill pickles. I only knew how to spell it. On today's show, for our feature interview, we'll have with us Gary Allen, who is an ardent advocate for the animals and lives here in British Columbia, where the issue of wolves and the threats they are facing at the hands of man has been largely in the news this year due to the recent government-encouraged cull that is now taking place in various regions of the province. I really didn't know much about this issue before this week, but it's certainly a relevant one in terms of the political meanderings that are going on behind our backs at the expense of the animals who are being killed. Gary is going to talk to us today about these issues and will give us a clear picture of the threats facing the wolves in BC and explain why they are facing these dangers. He will also share with us some engaging facts about these often misunderstood creatures in the wild. And for our first segment today, I'll be presenting to you travel tips and recommendations for compassionate eating, part 7 on Portland, Oregon, based on our recent trip there last weekend. And when I say our, I'm referring to Tara, our co-host, Alyssa, who is actually still in Portland because she loves it so much there, and she decided to extend her stay, and myself, Allison. So much good plant-based food, and certainly not enough time to explore it all, but we'll be going through some of our recommendations for our explorations this time around. That segment is coming up in about 9 minutes. If you'll remember, we had dolphin advocate Leah Lemieux on the show 2 weeks ago to speak about dolphin issues in promotion of a public screening of the documentary film The Cove that was to be shown in Vancouver last night, and Leah was giving a talk as well before the screening. So I actually heard from her this morning, and she said that that screening went really well. It was a full house. It was packed. People were really receptive,
right,
which is great.
Nice.
And she also told me that there was an infiltrator from the Vancouver Aquarium there in the audience, but that person was quickly shot down by the audience. The audience took care of this person, she said.
Nice. That's awesome.
So definitely check out that show if you're interested in learning more. That was from 2 weeks ago, September 16th. It can be found on our website. animalvoices.org. So she was in town this week for the screening. She's from Ontario, and I had the pleasure of meeting with Leah for dinner several days ago after she had spent an afternoon at the Vancouver Aquarium, and we had a really good talk about many of the experiences she has had in her quest for helping the animals throughout the past decades, and it was really an honor to be able to pick her brain for this knowledge, and as I told her, to at least to be able to vicariously live these experiences through her. In her book, Rekindling the Waters, The Truth About Swimming with Dolphins, she does write about many of these experiences, and we are going to be doing our draw now for a lucky listener to win an autographed copy of this book. So I've got the entrance here, and I need a drum roll. Thank you.
Drum roll.
It's pretty loud. Okay, so the winner is... Okay, how do I say this? Rasa Ramanowskaiti. So congratulations.
Congrats.
You won a copy of this amazing, fantastic book, and I will be in touch with you soon on how you can claim your book. So as I've made reference to, Tara, Alyssa, and I spent some time in Portland, Oregon last weekend to attend the annual Portland Veg Fest and to indulge in all things good and cruelty-free in what is known as North America's number one vegan-friendly city. Quick question. Have you, Robin or Morgan, been to Portland?
I've been dying
no,
to for
Morgan's
a long
Morgan's nodding his head saying no, and you haven't. Okay, so perhaps you'll learn some stuff from today's show.
Perhaps I'll be off there on the next bus.
Yeah, like Alyssa. She loved it so much she stayed. It's known as North America's number one vegan-friendly city, as you probably know. I have been to the Portland Veg Fest once before in the past, and when I saw the lineup of what was happening at this year's festival, I couldn't pass it up to attend again. The event started just 7 years ago in 2004 with an attendance of only 300 in a church basement, I believe it was, and you would never know that by experiencing the massive event that it is now, taking place at the Oregon Convention Center and boasting an enormous room full of vendors and a first-rate lineup of notable speakers and many excellent and relevant topics. This year's two-day event was one definitely worth the semi-lengthy cross-border drive for. So, Tara, you were there from, I think, Friday to Tuesday, right? One day longer than I. And what did you have to experience at VegFest that you enjoyed?
Well, I was tabling at the Forks Over Knives table, selling the DVDs and the companion books that go along with it. And that was a great experience, seeing everybody that has seen the movie and is now using it as a tool instead of the China study to, you know, bring awareness.
It's a compliment to the China study. Like,
yes,
that's a really
absolutely
dense book. I couldn't even get through it. I had to read the first two chapters twice for a reader's group, and then I gave up because I ran out of time. And I still have it at home. But I think it's a compliment to the book because it talks about Dr. T. Colin Campbell's study in there and a lot of other recent studies that have been happening lately that mm-hmm. are now being transferred to video and through film, because that's mm-hmm. what really gets people. And I actually took advantage of the opportunity to watch it at the VegFest because they had two screenings of it, and I actually hadn't even seen it before. It was such a good film.
Yeah.
Such a good film, and
absolutely
really well attended. And yeah, I bought one of the DVDs to share, as you're talking about outreach, right?
Mm-hmm.
I want everyone I know to watch that DVD, and I already have one customer.
Absolutely.
Morgan, I'm going to bring it to him next week. So yeah, and then you worked at the Sequel Naturals booth too, right?
The Vega booth, yeah. I was talking about the Vega products and how good it is. Yeah, lots of people were interested, you know, people that haven't heard about it and wanted to learn more, and yeah, it was
let's talk
awesome.
About Dr. Neil Barnard. He was there. I think that room, I don't know what kind of seat you had, but I got there 15 minutes before to get a good seat, which didn't happen. We were like third row from the back or something, and there were about, I don't know, like 50 rows, about, what would you say, like 500 people?
Oh, it
packed. People
absolutely
standing at the sides, people just squishing in whatever way they could.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when he was here in 2003 in Vancouver, and we had him at the Roundhouse, and that room seats about 300. I don't even remember if it was full or not. And it was such a smaller attendance because he wasn't as well known, and now everyone knows him because he's in Forks Over Knives. And
they had to turn people away.
I bet they did. Yeah, if I got there 15 minutes before and could barely get a seat, it was so well attended. He's such a great speaker, and I just really enjoy, like, I've seen him before, right? But you can never see Dr. Neil Barnard too many times. My sister he made my sister vegan in 2003.
Oh, really?
So he's a great influence, and she loves him, and I love him, and we were going to volunteer for him last week at his talk at Vancouver that got canceled the
it's
day before.
But, I was so excited
yeah,
to see him.
But fortunately, but fortunately we got to see him on Saturday. So
nice.
Yeah, that went over exceedingly well.
Yeah, he's a really good speaker. He's really, really well spoken.
He's charismatic.
Absolutely. He's very funny.
He has the crowd laughing,
which, you know, really keeps people in the moment and understanding what's going on. And I really liked at the end how he asked people to do vegan outreach. Like, he really made that a point of saying it. And I think that's a great thing for a doctor to do, is to make, mm-hmm. you know, spread the
he's
word.
He's not a typical doctor.
No, not at all.
President of the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, PCRM.org, if people want to learn more about that. Yeah, and go ahead.
I bet you could see a talk of his on YouTube, eh?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure looking
up
Dr. Neil Barnard.
He's also been on TV, so.
Many? Yeah, quite a few times. I think I saw him on The Doctors this year when they were promoting Forks Over Knives on there.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so I would like to now move on to our events. And I just want to announce a special upcoming Animal Voices event that we'll be holding in a couple weeks. And we are having our first annual, I hope, Animal Voices Compassionate Thanksgiving Potluck and Clothing Swap.
Woo.
Yay! So it's happening. As I was saying before, this is solely driven by my desire and need to empty out my closet. And and to eat tofurkey. So free tofurkey. Tofurkey's a sponsor.
This is the first time I've heard about tofurkey roasts.
Really?
So as I said, I need people to cook those tofurkeys. This can be your chance. So Monday, October the 10th from 6 till 9 p.m. And it's happening at the Unitarian Church of Vancouver, which is a great space that's located at 949 West 49th Avenue in Vancouver. The Animal Voices radio crew will be there, and you can join other like-minded, animal-friendly people who wish to get together to celebrate a compassionate Thanksgiving community potluck dinner, and don't forget about the clothing swap. So if you would like to attend, please bring a vegan dish to share. That is a dish free of animal products, and bring a serving utensil, plate, and cutlery. As I mentioned, Tofurky will be sponsoring this event, and we'll also be having many vegan Tofurky roasts to feed everyone. So yeah, if you're like Robin and you haven't tried the Tofurky yet, the famous or infamous Tofurky right. that some people love and some people hate, I personally love it. Mm-hmm. Hey, I gave Morgan some Tofurky today, the tempeh, yeah. and hopefully he will love it too. But that's tempeh, so it's a bit of a different story. And I don't think you can buy that in Canada, which is why
no,
I bought it in the States.
I've never seen it.
Yeah, so also in the spirit of giving and sharing, because it is Thanksgiving, start now to go through your closets at this time to get rid of your pants that no longer fit, or if you have your wardrobe from the 80s or 90s. I was going to say 80s, but then I figured people like Robin wouldn't have been alive by then, and maybe a lot of our attendees, so last decade. That obviously dates me, but empty out your wardrobe, clothes that you don't want. Bring these to the event, as we will also be having a clothing swap to share our offerings after the dinner.
And ladies, bring boyfriends, because as we were talking about, there's never very many.
And you know what I'm going to do for this swap is definitely separate the men's clothing out, because the last one I went to was all in a humongous pile, and the poor men, like the token men that were there, really had to wade through all the female clothes. So that's not going to happen at this
poor
one.
Guys.
It's going
nice.
To be... It's going to be a better version of the one that I went to. So we're going to also have a raffle fundraiser for Animal Voices with many fantastic prizes. Our prizes include many vegan and animal-friendly books, a $25 gift card for Carmivore, a snack gift bag packed with vegan treats from Food Fight Grocery in Portland, vegan belts, vegan-themed t-shirts, multiple gift baskets with yummy gourmet foods, vegan dog food, and more. There will be a $5 entry fee for this event, and that goes towards paying for the venue and will be donated to animal-friendly charities. We do recommend buying your tickets in advance. I'm going to be setting that up online this week, so tune in on Facebook and listen in next week on how you can buy your tickets. And yeah, I just really looking forward to this, and stay tuned for more information on the on our Thanksgiving event that we'll be having.
Yeah, sounds like fun.
Mm-hmm. Definitely be there.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Make sure to be there. It's something that's really needed in Vancouver.
Yeah. Feeling angry at the system?
Yeah! Tune in to Start Craving.
Taking a closer look at the prison system.
Bringing you voices of resistance.
The first three Mondays of each month.
From 7 to 8 p.m.
Right here on Co-op Radio, 102.7 FM.
You are listening to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 102.7 FM, CFRO Vancouver Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
And that was a real live male voice in the studio here. I'm very impressed. So this is part 7 of our series of travel tips and recommendations for compassionate eating, and I'll be speaking about my recommendations for Portland, Oregon, based on my trip there last weekend. I have presented a similar segment on Portland before, just over a year ago, and you can look that up on our website, animalvoices.org, if you'd like to listen to even more recommendations that this fabulous and very vegan-friendly city has to offer. Portland is known to be a mecca for all things vegan and animal friendly, and so it is without much coercion that I can be convinced to take the 5.5 hour drive there to be essentially submerged in a hedonistic plethora of cruelty-free cuisine for the duration of my stay. And being that I've stayed there 4 times now, each visit beckons the opportunity to try out new places to eat that I haven't had a chance to yet before, which is precisely what I did this time around, and I'm happy to be able to report back some auspicious findings. But first a few words about compassionate eating and what that means, as I always like to touch on this whenever I can to remind our listeners about the inherent connection between food and animals. I think it is so important to recognize the direct link between our food choices and how they so greatly influence not only our personal health and that of the environment, but more primarily the effect that they have on the billions of living creatures among us whose entire existence and well-being may be dictated by these choices that we make 3 times a day. To choose not to eat animals or animal byproducts means to choose compassion, because when you decide to eat vegan instead, you are exercising your choice to spare others from harm as much as possible. And that is what I like to think that the show is largely about, to show respect and care for the non-human animals on this earth by doing the least harm to them. So now back to the food, and where shall I begin? I have to say that there are two well-known vegan restaurants to try out that were at the top of my list, and which for some reason or other I hadn't been able to get in my previous Portland visits. So I made sure that we went there this time near the beginning of our trip as not to miss out. The first place to discover was the famed Blossoming Lotus restaurant, and my sister and I went there for dinner on our first evening in town. For those who aren't in the know, Blossoming Lotus is one of Portland's premier plant-based restaurants and serves organic, freshly made vegan fusion cuisine, offering both cooked and raw food options. I love that they have the raw options and also serve cooked, and I love that the basis of the menu offerings are all really wholesome, nutritious, and delicious. You take pleasure in the varied textures and flavors of goodness in this food, but it's also good for your body as well, and of course the animals. So on this evening, I unfortunately wasn't feeling particularly hungry after having had a hearty lunch in Seattle, so I was looking for something light. My sister, on the other hand, indulged in the cooked four-cheese lasagna, boasting a non-dairy delight of herbed tofu ricotta, grossed garlic and squash mozzarella, and sesame parmesan served on a bed of steamed greens and topped with cashew cream. How does that sound?
I also had that one, and it was so good. I can vouch for it. It's really delicious.
And there's a picture of it on our website if you want to see what I'm talking about.
Nice.
So small appetite as she has, and I don't know how she was able to give up half of her piece for me. So my sister actually gave me half of her lasagna to eat later on, but we were so busy eating at other places all week, and I actually took it home with me, and it really was a truly welcoming gratification to eat one evening this week when I really needed something delicious and satisfying. It was so good, and it's just another reminder to me of how we so desperately need a place like this here in Vancouver. What I had that night at the restaurant was also very impressive. The roasted beet and curried cashew salad I had as my entree was fresh, tasty, and fulfilling. But it's the dessert that I really want to talk about, as I'm still having daydreams about this here a week after.
Ooh.
I chose the raw raspberry pomegranate cheesecake, which was absolutely one of the best cheesecakes I have ever devoured. And it's true that it's always the raw desserts that take on this acclamation with me.
Really?
Oh, very much. Please, go to Organic Lies if you need to learn about raw desserts here in Vancouver. To describe this cashew cheesecake, just imagine the smoothest and most flavorful melange of fresh fruit and creaminess reveling in ecstasy in your mouth, and that pretty much describes as best as one can in words the most utmost pleasure that food can give. So you had the lasagna, mm-hmm. Blossom Lotus. Did you have dessert?
No,
I
didn't.
Oh, how can you say you didn't have dessert? There's so many.
We ended up going to Voodoo Donuts that has voodoo vegan
right.
options, so we went there for dessert.
And I think I saw you there too, which is
yeah,
small
right.
town. There's two locations too. Who was there? Tara.
Mm-hmm.
So Blossoming Lotus is located at 1713 Northeast 15th Avenue in Portland, and their website is blpdx.com. Next on my list is what was definitely another salacious delight in culinary discoveries. Ever since it opened a few years ago, everyone in the vegan foodie world has been talking and raving about the restaurant Portobello Vegan Trattoria as a must-go-to place while in Portland. And from firsthand experience, now I know why. This is a restaurant that is not only known as the very best vegan restaurant in Portland these days, but is even making the mainstream scene as being recognized in mainstream media as one of the best restaurants overall in the city. And that's saying a lot for our meat-centric society. Being that it's an Italian restaurant, you might be thinking pasta and pizza, right? But Portobello goes several steps beyond this expected food stereotype and offers up a menu of selections so impressive and different than what at least an un-Italian cultured Canadian girl like myself might expect. So two main things that impressed upon me about Portobello are that the food presentations were so varied, creative, and generous. And two, for the food of a caliber of a fine dining experience, it was incredibly and surprisingly reasonably priced. So you could either order dishes a la carte, or for $32, you could have four courses. That's a first course, a pasta course, a main entree, and a dessert. And that's what I did, since I had given myself permission to gain five pounds over the weekend of the course, the weekend, and I was going to stick with that goal. And I actually surpassed that goal and gained 6 pounds.
Good
so,
for you.
Thank you. Now I'm going to try to accurately recall exactly what I had to eat, as not all the menu items are listed on the Portobello website for reference. Of course, I didn't think of writing them down. And I believe this is because they change up their prefix menu frequently based on whatever fresh vegetables are in season. So for the first course, I chose pisaldière. And do you have any idea what that could be?
No idea.
It's a fancy word for a caramelized onion tart with capers and olives, which was so yummy. The pastry was soft, and the onion tart was the onion tart filling was filling, as a filling should be. I was surprised, actually, at how satisfying and generous the servings of all the courses were, because with the high-caliber restaurants that I've been to, like Madeleine Bistro in L.A. or Millennium in San Francisco, the portion servings are usually ridiculously small for the price that you're paying. I actually was already full by the second course, and that doesn't mean I didn't eat everything I was served. Obviously, I was on a culinary mission to taste and experience all I could on this four-day trip, and that certainly included partaking in all the food I could muster. So the next course, the pasta, was easy for me to choose, as virtually every blog and online review that I've read of this place consistently recommends the gnocchi as being amazing. And I had to see this for myself, especially since I'm not usually too impressed at all by these little pillows of potato dough that are really just little blobs of cooked potato dough. But for the blobs that they were, it was a marriage of the broth and the fresh vegetables that they were served with that made the dish particularly tasty. Same goes for the main course, a seitan eggplant meatball plate, it was called, which consisted of two amazing, delicious plant-based meatballs laden in a brothy quinoa and fresh vegetable assembly. It was so good and so filling and just real hearty food that is the epitome of making you feel like you're eating authentic cooking by a little old Italian grandma who is stowed away in the kitchen sweating for you as she creates these culinary gifts for her customers, but that actually isn't the case. And of course, dessert. I'm going to be thinking long and hard about this dessert now for an infinite duration, or at least I can recreate it myself. Upon much prior recommendation, I had to get the tiramisu, and this dessert as well scores up there as one of the best I've ever consumed. The vegan mascarpone cheese used for this tiramisu, I was told, is actually tofutti soy cream cheese. And this fact really surprised me because it was so incredibly light and fluffy and not imbuing the density of cream cheese at all. So light and fluffy, in fact, that I felt that I could have easily devoured a whole pan of this luscious dessert. And maybe one day when I have a chance to try to recreate this sweet treasure, I will do just that.
How after, about at the potluck?
Could do that. We'll see. But I have to figure out how to make it first.
I love tiramisu.
I have made a tiramisu for a potluck that I was told by someone was the best dessert they had ever tasted in their life. So there you go. Man. And that wasn't raw. So Portobello Vegan Trattoria is located at 1125 Southeast Division Street in Portland, and their website is portobellopdx.com.
And make sure to do reservations because they...
Yes, we reserved. Oh, yeah, yes. And it was full, and especially during Veg Fest weekend, it probably was even more full.
Absolutely.
So what do you do in Portland when you want to change for the indulgence of luxurious, cruelty-free dining in perhaps a more casual setting? Well, I know there's, of course, a lot of other options in the city, and my final two are good examples of casual vegan eating in Portland. To go through them very quickly here in the interest of time, the last two places I want to recommend are Hungry Tiger 2 and Papa G's Organic Vegan Deli. Hungry Tiger 2 is a bar/restaurant that is not even a vegan eatery, but actually offers a whole vegan menu on the reverse side of its omnivorous menu, claiming that its mission statement is to cater to all dietary preferences. That is progressive, I have to say, and I wish that more restaurants that want to cater to the mainstream and still offer meat on their menus would at least acknowledge a growing customer base of those who eschew animals from their diet and offer up this very reasonable option. The vegan menu is plentiful as well, so it's not like there's just the token veggie burger and pasta primavera dish on there. This is a bar, so you can expect indulgent comfort food. My sister had the deep-fried tofu, which I think was supposed to mimic like a fish, like deep-fried... deep battered fish and chips and yam fries. She had too. It was really, really good. And I had the macaroni and cheese with a side salad, and we both shared a vegan soft serve ice cream cone for dessert. There were lots of other sinful options here to choose from as well, but not too sinful, as you know that no animals were harmed in the making of this food. And they also do a daily vegan breakfast that is recommended, so it's on my list to try next time. To see their full menu, you can visit their website at hungrytiger2.com. That's two spelled T-O-O. And finally, let's get to a place of just minimalistic, healthy fare that calls itself the most organic vegan company in Oregon. That's quite a claim to make. And that is Papa G's Organic Vegan Deli. Alyssa, my sister, and I just happened to be passing by this place on our thrift shopping excursion on the last day that we were in town. And I think we were all drawn to this place after having had indulged in so much rich and fattening food over the weekend that we were all in need of detoxification and healing nourishment. So this is where Papa G's so conveniently fit in. Alyssa and I actually both ordered the exact same thing, the organic raw sun cheese sandwich, which was a plate of sunflower cheese and veggies on two slices of raw onion flatbread, along with a side of raw zucchini noodles. And to round it out, I also had a glass of organic, fresh, raw, blueberry-flavored coconut kefir as a beverage and a yummy raw macaroon for dessert.
Oh my gosh.
It was so good just to get, like, our bodies were just crying out for this food, right? Just wanted fresh, healthy food. Yeah. And it felt so good to give our bodies what they needed. So for more information on Papa G's Organic Vegan Deli, you can visit their website, papagees.com. It's curiously misspelled. So it's PAPPAGS.com. And I will stop there for now for my recommendations for Portland this time around, because I want to hear about some of your recommendations, Tara. I know that you went to several places that I've never been to before. So one of them was Red and Black Cafe that yes. I've heard a lot about, and I don't think I have been there before. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just around the block from the Vegan Mini Mall. So
okay. It's by Hungry Tiger too then as well.
Yes, exactly. A few blocks down from there as well. And when we went there, we all got the Dragon Bowl, which is it's noodles with a peanut sauce, and it's absolutely delicious. It's so, so good. And every time we go to Portland, we always try and make a trip to Red and Black just for this one thing. They also have a sandwich that I really like, which is like bacon, lettuce, tomato, but it's without the bacon and it's tempeh instead.
Oh,
so yeah, that's really good. And they also have a lot of really good options for breakfast. So if you want a really hearty breakfast, they have waffles with a mole sauce sometimes. It changes, but yeah, it's for sure fabulous place to eat.
Can I just ask you about the mini mall, the vegan mini mall?
Yes.
What is that?
I haven't heard of the vegan mini mall. You have to listen to the show from last year. I talked all about it.
Nice. Yeah, nice. Yeah, you have to go there. It's got,
Yeah, we can't tell you about it. You just have to go there.
You just have to go there. It's got a vegan bakery. It's got a vegan grocery store, Food Fight. And it also has a Herbivore, which is a t-shirt shop that has lots of cool, books and vegan outreach t-shirts that, you know, have awesome logos on them. And a tattoo shop as well, vegan tattoos.
Oh gosh, it sounds like paradise.
It is, absolutely, yes it is.
I think Portland itself is paradise.
Yeah.
There's lots going on there.
Absolutely. And then the other place I really love is Voodoo Donuts, which you can usually get, donuts in Seattle. What is that?
Mighty O's. They're not as good.
They're not as good.
They're not.
They're good. Blocks. They're good, but they're the cake donuts, and Voodoo Donuts is the raised donuts. So
actually, Mighty O has raised.
Oh, do they now?
You have to special order them, though.
Oh, really?
Because they don't make that many. They sell out really quickly in the day.
But, well, Voodoo has them all the time, and it's open 24 hours, and yeah, they're really good, and they're so creative with them. Like, you can get this grape donut that has...
And what's with the fruit? Fruit Loops.
Oh yeah, it has fruit. Some of them have Fruit Loops on top.
Like, why?
you can get this little Voodoo donut that's in the shape of a man, and it comes with a pretzel that you can like stick him with, and he has jelly
inside.
That's
what that was for. I thought that was voodoo related.
Is that vegan?
Yeah, I know. I was looking at it going, is this what I think it's for?
It's pretty funny. It's really good, and they have like all kinds of different sizes. My friend got a giant glazed donut, and it's literally like bigger than your head is how big it is. It's huge, so it's definitely an experience to go there as well. So yeah, good times in Portland.
Yeah, well, thanks for that. And Robin, definitely listen to our we actually replayed that episode last week, so if people were listening. So it was from, I think it was from August 27th, 2010, and you can go on our website and hear even more Portland recommendations.
Nice.
if you would like. So we are going to move on to Tara's news now.
Awesome. Okay, so in local news, on Vancouver Island, six winter stores have decided to pull fur from their racks for this upcoming season. Mm-hmm. Vancouver Animal Defense League got the email this past week, and they've asked for a letter saying that they're going to keep it off of their shelves forever, but they were declined. But this is still, you know, a really great victory for animals and for everybody that went out to the protests as well.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
So they got rid of fur. They're still carrying leather, I guess.
Yes. Yes. They're still carrying leather, but still a really great victory.
Yeah, huge victory.
And I think this is a great time for all the other protesters across Canada to really make a point of protesting at the winners' locations, because since they did it on Vancouver Island, you know, there's a better chance that they're going to do it across Canada. So
definitely, yeah, there's no reason not to now.
Yeah, so organize a protest. If you need help organizing, or you need to learn how to organize a protest, you can contact Vancouver Animal Defense League at live.ca to learn more. And also, another place that's banning fur is West Hollywood in California.
That was confirmed this week, right?
Yes.
In the news.
Yeah, so that's another great victory as well. Also, California has passed a bill to ban shark fin soup. Have you guys heard about that?
I have. They're incredibly progressive. And I think that was also very recently in the news too, right? Mm-hmm. Which is why, obviously, you're telling us about it today.
Yes, yes, yeah. So that's fantastic news as well. It's really exciting to see that, especially because California has a really large Asian population, and that's why it's so popular there. Mm-hmm. And so it's great to see that.
As here, as it is here too in Vancouver,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely, yeah. I've done walk through Chinatown to see, you know, just how popular it is. And every Asian store that you walk into, they have jars and jars and jars, just walls lined with shark fins. And it's really sad to see, you know, because sharks are we need them to
they're at the top
oceans.
Of the food chain. We absolutely need them. And we've done a show on this issue, which was about a year in, I think it was last June in 2010. So if people want to listen to that, that was with Claudia Lee of Shark Truth. It's a really, really good interview. She was one of my favorite interviewees ever. She's like really knowledgeable, and she's still working on these issues with her group.
That's awesome. Yeah, definitely check that out. Also, in other news, Canadian news, Toronto has banned pet stores from selling dogs and cats to fight puppy mills. So the Toronto City Council voted unanimously to ban the sale of dogs and cats in pet stores. Most of the adorable puppies and kittens you find in stores are often large-scale breeding operations, and these breeders continue to breed more and more animals while shelters and rescue groups continue to be overcrowded with dogs and cats in need of homes. Councillor Glenn D. Barrowmakers proposed a ban that went before the council in May, but it was postponed. And he says that the new ban slams the door closed on people who mass produce animals for profit and will allow those who adopt pets to know they were treated humanely and with love. So pet stores will be able to feature pets available for adoption through local rescue organizations. So I think that's an awesome idea, you know, a better option for pet stores to do that.
Absolutely. There's so many cats and dogs that need homes.
Mm-hmm.
And puppies and kittens.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Thank you so much for that, Tara. And we're going to move on to our next interview. You are listening to the Animal Voices radio show here on 102.7 FM CFRO Vancouver Cooperative Radio. So today's feature interview is with Gary Allen, who is an advocate for the wolves who lives on Northern Vancouver Island and works towards conservation of these often misunderstood creatures. He has two wolf dog companions himself named Meshach and Tundra, and he takes Tundra into schools and community groups to do educational presentations on wolves, having visited over 50 schools and 10,000 students in the past 3 years. Gary is here today to speak with us about the threats currently facing the wolves in our own province of British Columbia, Canada. Hello, Gary, and welcome to the Animal Voices radio show.
Thank you, Allison, for inviting me.
Yeah, so I'd like to get right into the wolf issue as it pertains to what is happening in our province of BC and the government's approach to it. It's been announced that as of June 15th of this year, the government is now allowing in certain regions of BC open season for wolf killing. And this means that anyone who wants to kill wolves can do this as they wish with essentially no regulation, from what I understand. Can you please tell us about the stipulations of this loosened allowance and exactly what the government has done to allow this cull, as I'll call it?
Sure, Allison. It's regarding Region 5, which is the Caribou region, and it's in that region there are certain cells that are called management units. And so from management unit 5-1 to 5-6, and from 5-12 to 5-15, which is essentially from Quesnel in the north boundary to 70 Mile House in the south boundary, and from west of Anaheim Lake, way out in the west Chilcotin, to almost the Alberta border, so probably 350 miles, those management units now allow for unlimited hunting and trapping and killing of wolves. There is no compulsory reporting of killing wolves in Region 5. So the government will not know how many wolves are killed in that area. There is no bag limit. Now, a bag limit usually in BC and in many of the regions is 3 wolves per person per year. And in this area, what they've done is they've relaxed that to there is absolutely no bag limit. You could kill as many wolves as you wish in that in Region 5 in those management units.
So who exactly is doing this hunting and killing of wolves? Is it just people who like to hunt for whatever reason? Can you just draw some light on that?
Sure. Yes, Allison, what it is the BC government, they don't want to call it a wolf cull as they did orchestrate one in the 80s in the Musqua-Kachika area. What they've done is they've relaxed the regulatory environment so that hunters and trappers and ranchers and that can go out there and virtually kill any wolf that they see in those areas. So what they're trying to do is to get the citizens of BC to do their work for them.
So this work that you're speaking of, they want to basically decrease the wolf population, and this has to do with issues with livestock. Can you talk about that, please?
Sure. Yes, Allison, this is being driven purely and solely by the ranchers, by the BC Cattlemen Association. And what they say is that there's too many wolves. But they can't give any data as to how many wolves that are in that area. Neither the cattlemen can, and neither can the Environment Ministry, Fish and Wildlife in that area. And I can speak about that a bit later. But what they see, the cattlemen say, there's way too many wolves in there, and we have to cull them because Larry Pinn in the Vancouver Sun, in his article in August, he has a quote from Jennifer McClarty, who is a spokesperson for the Ministry of Forest, Lands, and Natural Resources, which is the ministry that has jurisdiction in this. And she says that anecdotal information from ranchers, stakeholders, ministry staff, and other local First Nations suggests that wolf populations, interesting, the word is suggests, that wolf populations in the Caribou region are at historically high levels and are having significant predatory impacts on livestock. So there's no data that they can provide that says that, you know, in 2006 there was 100 wolves and now there's 500. They don't know that. And they're also saying there's significant predatory impacts on livestock. And the data, the statistics, just don't bear that out.
Why would the government do this? Are there perhaps political and internal ties with Cattle Ranchers Association?
Oh, for sure. The Cattlemen's Association is a very, very powerful group. And, I can just give you an idea of one of the environment ministers who had to deal with them. Some of your listeners may remember Rafe Mayer. Rafe was the Socred cabinet minister elected in the early 80s. And he was appointed to be environment minister. Now, Rafe was from the Kamloops area, which is a large ranching area, and his constituents were ranchers. And he tells me in a couple emails I've had with Rafe that on day one that he was the environment minister, he stopped the slaughter of wolves to the great consternation of the BC Ranchers Association, which he says were very big in Kamloops, his riding. There was a Socred backbencher from Smithers, another big ranching area. His name was Cyril Shelford. And what Cyril did was, with his, and this is Rafe's quote, with his never-ending supply of brothers, called for a rally in Smithers and dared him to go. And Rafe said, well, I had to go because Premier Bennett told him to go. So Rafe goes into Smithers on the train, and he meets with them. And he says, after 15 minutes, the boos finally stopped. And he said, this is the first time in history a man has been ridden into town on the rails. The booing started all over again. I tell you honestly, it was very scary. So this is the kind of political pressure that is being put onto the government. In this case, Rafe showed his political leadership and, you know, looked at the data and concluded that there simply was no reason to doing this. What we're lacking right now, Allison, is any political leadership in this province to make the same kind of decision that Rafe made, which is that the this call should be terminated.
And from what I understand and what you're alluding to is that there really is no threat to the cattle livestock in BC. From what I've been reading, many statistics here saying that slightly more than 0.01% of cattle that were due to wolf kills, their losses were due to wolf kills. That's 0.01%. So, and more cattle are killed by accident on the way to the slaughterhouse.
Yeah,
as an example.
Yeah, and those examples that you provided me are really very telling. You mentioned it, this Stats Canada says there's about 525,000 head of cattle in BC in 2010, and there were 55 wolf caused losses to the cattle industry. Now, how many of those were in the Chilcotin? Probably less than that. Wolves, and the stats that are both available in Canada and the U.S. show that they kill very, very few cattle. In the U.S., it's about 1%. The domestic dog kills more than the wolf. Transporting them from the ranch to the slaughterhouse kills more than what wolves do.
So this is really just a political driven, I don't know, just the
decision.
It's crazy. Can you tell us about the killing that has already been happening in the past, and more recently you had mentioned the cull in the 1980s where 908 wolves were killed?
Sure. Yes, that was the famous brutal Musqua Kachika cull, which is the area west of Fort Nelson. And the motivation for that cull was the large American hunting groups felt that the wolves were taking out the ungulates up there, the moose and caribou and such. So they orchestrated this wolf cull, and over that period of time, they killed 908. Now, this was done mainly through helicopter hunting. So you had crews in helicopters flying above the territory and killing all the wolves. And there was 908 of them that were killed, according to one of the studies published by one of the scientists that was involved in that. Now, that was there was a lot of political opposition to that and citizen opposition to it. And what I'm told by certain government officials in the Environment Ministry is they don't want to go back to that kind of wolf cull. So what they're doing is setting a nice regulatory environment to do this. Now, let me explain just on this change in the regulations for Region 5. The reason that they did that was because the cattle producers in the western part of Region 5 wanted the same regulations that were in the eastern part of Region 5. Now, so they changed the regulations. You now have the cattlemen up in the Vanderhoof and Prince George area, in the Smithers area, and probably be up in the Peace River area, that are going to put the same kind of political pressure on the government and these government officials. Why do our brother cattlemen have these kind of very relaxed regulations to kill as many wolves as we can, and we can't have that? And so what it can do is really spread to other areas of the province, Allison, mm-hmm. so that if you're a wolf, you're going to be a target in many areas. And I think that that's a real likelihood that's going to happen.
So I'm wondering if there really was a problem with wolf populations being a threat to livestock or to caribou or whatnot, what would be the appropriate solution rather than the seemingly haphazard one that is now in place, instead of giving just anyone who wants free rein to kill as many wolves as they want and, you know, no regulation, no counting of how many are being killed? What would be an appropriate conservation and management plan that the government may already be working on?
Well, there's two ways that I think that you need to look at this, at the solutions. One is let's look at the value that wolves have in the environment. Wolves are considered a top predator or a keystone species. And by that, Allison, what it means is they're at the top of the food chain, mm-hmm. and they regulate the environment. If you take them out of the environment like you did in the Yellowstone National Park for many years, and you see the degradation of that environment. Now, here, you know, the wolves can actually be a benefit to the cattlemen. Let me explain. Here's a quote from a wildlife control specialist near Williams Lake. His name is Kyle Lay. And what he says is, okay, so what his job would be to control certain wildlife that are a problem for the ranchers. He says, one of the most valuable lessons learned is that simply killing wolves for being wolves doesn't stop livestock losses. If you can keep a group of non-problem wolves in a territory, they will be the best gatekeepers a ranch can have, better than any guard dog or gun. So let me repeat that. You know, they can be the best gatekeepers a ranch can have, better than any guard dog or gun. And the reason being, Allison, is wolves are very territorial. So mm-hmm. if you're a rancher and you're in an area that is has wolves, and those wolves are not depredating on your livestock, you want to keep them in your area because it's a known quantity. And Dr. Paul Paquette said that as well in an interview with Larry Pinn. He, you know, he said that he noted that predator control programs that kill wolves indiscriminately usually result in more predation on livestock rather than less due to the disruption of wolf pack social dynamics and the breakdown of territories. So when you have wolves in your area that are not depredating on your livestock, they're killing wild ungulates, and you want to keep them that. Wolves also keep other predators out of their area. The research has shown that cougars will not come into an area, a territory where there's a very stable wolf pack. They will skirt that area. Also, wolves keep coyotes in check. Coyotes are what are referred to as a mesopredator. They are a lower-ranking predator. So here's the unintended consequence that can happen. You eliminate a fair amount of wolves, and all of a sudden you're going to have more of these predators coming in. And if you look at what the coyote does, it kills 25% of the livestock losses in the U.S. So what you're going to do is you're going to replace the wolf that kills 1% with an animal that kills 25%. That doesn't seem to me to be very productive to the cattlemen. Now, I'm not insensitive to the cattlemen. You know, they have their ranches. They want to protect their property. They want to protect their assets. Mm-hmm. I understand that. But there are lots of non-lethal ways of doing it. So this is the second part of my sort of solution or whatever. And what you have there is you can have a lot of non-lethal predator control programs. And they would include things such as herd surveillance, range riders, people that will just ride around the on horses or ATVs, quads or whatever, you know, surveilling their herds, you know, corralling them at night if that's possible to keep them away from the wolves. Carrion disposal. One of the problems is if cattle die as a result of natural causes or whatever, and you don't dispose of them, wolves can smell prey 2 kilometers away. Bears can smell that 2 kilometers away. So it becomes an attractant, and you now invite the wolf onto your farm. Age classing. By that, it means the younger yearlings or calves you keep near human surveillance, and that because what they found is, in terms of the research, that there's more depredation on livestock where you have the yearling cattle out on open range, not close to human surveillance, and also the use of guard animals. So, you know, we need a compensation program too in BC where the cattlemen, if it can be proven, you know, by biologists and conservation officers that wolves are killing their cattle, you know, that they get compensated for that.
It seems to me that there's a lot of creative solutions that could be explored rather than what's happening just now. I want to move on to talk about two beautiful wolf dogs that you have in your life named Meshach and Tundra. You've raised them both from newborn puppies. Can you very quickly tell us about them and the work that you do with Tundra to educate the public on wolves?
Sure, yes. I've had Tundra since a 3-week-old pup and Meshach from 5. Tundra's 4.5 years old right now. In fact, she's laying about 10, 12 feet away from me on the living room carpet. what I've done for about the last 3 years is I've gone into the schools, as you mentioned earlier, 50 schools at least, 10,000 students. And I didn't intend to do that when I got Tundra. She's just such a remarkable animal, and people just have such a connection to wolves. And she's a very high-content wolf dog. So I've been going into the schools. I've been to Vancouver, visited 6 schools there. I've visited most of the schools or a number of the schools in Vancouver Island. And I just go in there and talk about wolves. I do not talk very much at all about wolf conservation issues to the children. These are children that wouldn't understand all the nuances and complexities of it. I just talk to them about, the pup development, and I show pictures of Tundra as she grew up, and I talked to them about the wolf as a top predator and the value that it has in the environment. And she is just so well received by students, teachers.
People love to have a personal connection with animals, and I think that you are doing the right thing because you are starting from when people are young, when you have to get them, right? So that
That's right.
These children who are going to be our government decision makers in the future will remember this wolf that they met when they were a child and have just more of a better understanding of that these animals are actually individual creatures.
Yes.
Very, very quickly here,
what
can people do to protect the wolves? What do we need to do in conservation efforts for the wolves? And what is there that we can do?
Okay. Well, I think British Columbians have an affinity to wolves, and I think British Columbians demonstrated very clearly, you know, with the sled dog massacre up at Whistler, that was just abhorrent.
Yeah, that was huge.
Well, yes, and this same ill-advised policy that the BC government has in Region 5 is going to have the same kind of impact as you know, when they killed those defenseless 100-plus sled dogs. So I'm hoping that British Columbians will have the same abhorrence to this policy. What they need to do is, if they love Tundra's wild cousins, the wolf out in the wild, they need to be writing, emailing, phoning, faxing to Premier Christy Clark and to their MLA and that to say, you got to stop this. This is ill-advised. This is counterproductive to the cattlemen. We need wolves in the environment as a top predator regulator to ecosystems. We need to be able to help the cattlemen ensure that they can have a successful living. But killing wolves in this manner is not going to work. It's going to be counterproductive. So they really have to have this kind of political advocacy and get in touch with those officials. You know, if they need letters or whatever, they're certainly welcome to contact me. And, you know, I'm more than happy to assist people, you know, for taking that step.
Well, thank you so much, Gary, for coming on the show today to speak to us about the current issue facing wolves at the hands of humankind in our province. To learn more about Gary Allen and the work that he does for the wolves and to contact him, you can visit his website, which is whospeaksforwolf.com. And another good resource to check out is CanadianWolfCoalition.com. Thank you so much, Gary.
Thanks, Allison.
You are listening to Animal Voices radio show here on 102.7 FM, CFRO Vancouver Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. So stay tuned next week at the same time. I'll be hosting my first time on Animal Voices.
And it's going to be a surprise, right?
Yes, it'll be a surprise. So stay tuned for that. You can, if you want to learn more about what's coming up, you can check us out on Facebook, Animal Voices Vancouver, on Twitter, Animal Voices YVR, or you can look at our website, animalvoices.org. You can also contact us at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. So soon, Allison will be playing The Wolf, He Lives in You, from the Lion King 2 soundtrack. So...